accolading everybody. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire. That is right here on numberfire.com. And of course, the Number Fire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look ahead at the Honda Classic for PGA DFS and breaking down our thoughts for this weekend up on FanDuel. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, heading down to Florida this weekend at PGA National. Got some good names in the field, but not as many as last weekend. So a bit of a different feel for this event. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I feel like I ran into the bear trap last week against your head-to-head lineup. You had both Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy, so it was over pretty early because DJ won by, what was it, 10 strokes, and I think Rory beat everybody else by 5, so you know, I had no shot. You've won 4 in a row now in our head-to-head contest. So,
and last week I had this like really weird schedule where I was like traveling a lot, traveling beginning
to San Diego.
Yeah, and traveling at the end of the week. So I didn't have a lot of time to put thought into it. And I think that is a good takeaway in that just don't think about it, and I should be good to go. Like the less I think about my PGA lineups, I think the better I'll perform. So I think that's the key takeaway here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe you got some of that Dikembe Mutombo, like...
You got the finger wag.
Juju, yeah, I don't know. Absolutely. I got wagged pretty hard.
Yeah, that's the perks of, you know, being associated with FanDuel. They flew me out to L.A. to hang out with Dikembe Mutombo and MC, the World Fantasy Basketball Championship. Got to talk to a lot of DFS players, got to talk to the winners, talk about what they're doing with their winnings. And, of course, you know, just kind of hang out with Dikembe Mutombo, watch him swing a golf club. He actually is not that bad. He has custom-made clubs, in case you're curious, which makes sense given the fact that he's 7'2". But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And but I think the bobble hat was honestly the topper for everything for me at this point.
Yeah, the highlight. And in our picks contest, you had Hao Tong Lee as well as DJ, so you did pretty well there.
I forgot I had DJ. And Hao Tong Lee got a top 20, so... You know what? We're feeling good, Brandon. I think that every pick this week is going to be great. There will never be any variance or volatility or nastiness in PGA DFS. We can just assume everything will work out right. Exactly right, correct?
I mean, I want to play along, but this course, I mean,
it's tough. There's
water on basically every hole. There are like 500,000 bunkers. So you can blow up. Things can be looking good, but you can kind of run into a buzzsaw at the bear trap. And it's not even just the bear trap. I think it's like 4, 5, 6 is actually tougher statistically. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think that the bear trap, I think all three of those holes were among the 10 toughest on the tour last year. So the Honda Classic is at the PGA National Resort and Spas Champions Course. It is 7,125 yards. It is a par 70, and as Brandon mentioned, it is a very tough course. Only 11 golfers finished under par here last year. There were 42 in 2017, but back in 2016, there were 13 under par. Now, I think the weather for this week is more in alignment with the 2017 version, so may play a bit less difficult than it has in 2016 and 2018, but it's still a very tough course overall. About 140 golfers in the field for this week, traditional cut rules, so about half the golfers will miss the cut after the first two rounds. They're back to a regular event from that perspective. No more no-cut event that we had last weekend. So, Brandon, when you look at this course for the Honda Classic, what stands out to you statistically?
Well, before I even get into that, just with how tough this course is, I think that this could be a week where we give a little bit of extra weight to course performance. We generally downplay it on the podcast, and I don't think that I ever really regret it, but this just could be a week where we look back and see who's played here, who's played well here, and give them a little bit of a tie break over some similar golfers. But as for the key stats, I'm going to start again with strokes gained approach. It's a given at this point. It's been more important if you sort of run correlations with total strokes gained. Approach has been more important than strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained around the green combined over the past 5 years at PGA National, according to data that I pulled from fantasynational.com. Par 4 scoring on this par 70 is pretty vital. Outside of Justin Thomas last year, who was 12th in strokes gained on par 4s, The past four winners were all top five in strokes gained on the par fours. Ricky Fowler was fifth. Adam Scott led. Harrington was third. Russell Henley was first. And all five were top nine in par four strokes gained on holes from specifically 450 to 500 yards, according to Fantasy National. So that's like the key area, but overall, par four scoring is something that we should weigh in this week. Now, off the tee play still matters, but it's kind of neither distance nor accuracy alone that really popped. Driving still matters. Good drive rate, strokes gained off the tee sort of stand out relative to the other stats. I'm going with strokes gained off the tee as opposed to good drives, but I mean, just something to sort of factor in, like that total driving is something I'm doing. Greens and regulation matter a lot. Bogey avoidance is something that we don't look at normally, or at least I don't. It's not how you gain positive fantasy points, but again, this is a tough course. We need golfers to avoid bogeys, and usually bogeys can turn into doubles or worse. Eagles are virtually impossible. So, you know, for that reason, looking for guys who make the cut, I'm looking for bogey avoidance. So to recap, my list this week is basically strokes gained approach, strokes gained off the tee, so that ball striking, par four scoring, greens and regulations gained, and bogey avoidance.
You were talking about good drive rate. And when I was looking at my process for deciding which stats to focus on, it actually did pop more than usual. And I considered going with either that or strokes gained off the tee as a result. But even when I kind of graded on a curve, because it doesn't normally pop that much, I still wound up going with distance, because I think that when I look at like the guys who have done really well here, they tended to be ones who were long off the tee. Like last year, Justin Thomas first, Luke List second. Alex Noren was 71st in distance, but that's still better than where he was in accuracy and good drive rates. Tommy Fleetwood, Byung-Hun Ahn, all these guys are guys who are long off the tee. So to me, that said, from my normal process perspective, I probably should have gone with just strokes gained off the tee or with good drive rate. But when I look at, you know, the true top end guys, they tended to be ones who were pretty long off the tee. So I think that was kind of a tiebreaker for me, but I'm not going to disagree with going with strokes gained off the tee, because I think that like it does matter that you want good golfers overall for this event. You want guys who can handle a really tough course, and going with strokes gained off the tee broadly is probably going to lead you there more often than distance by itself. But I think that's just kind of why I had a slightly different approach for this one.
Yeah, I mean, distance does matter. Sure. It sort of always matters. It's always just something that can give you a leg up. I know other podcasts have been talking about distance a little bit that I've heard so far early on in the week. So, I mean, it's not something that I would discount by any means, but rolling it all up together into strokes gained off the tee is just something that I'm doing this week.
If you can get Luke List to look good, it's going to be fine by me. And both those stats will work for that. So no complaints here.
Got to juke the stats for Luke.
Well, that's the only reason I choose stats to begin with. You know, it's all okay. So where's Luke grading out well right now?
Yeah,
he's good in distance. Cool. We're going distance this week, and that's the process here. You did finish second year last year. We'll talk about him in the course history section. But as mentioned, probably putting a little bit more weight on that this year or this week than we usually do. Before we take a look at that past history here at PGA National, though, do want to let you know you can put your PGA knowledge to the test this weekend in FanDuel's Eagle Contest. It is $7.77 to enter, and for that, you get a shot at $100,000 in total prizes, with $20,000 going to first and $10,000 going to second place. So big bucks on the line for this weekend in the PGA Eagle Contest on FanDuel. Of course, they have plenty of other contests if you want some higher stakes contests or some lower stakes one as well with multiple entries. Check all those out, FanDuel.com, and look for the PGA Lobby. Let's take a look at the past history here. And as Brandon mentioned, probably putting a little bit more weight in that this week than we usually do because this course is so difficult. And Brandon, one golfer who is on the top end, and I think we'll talk a pretty good amount about this top end this week because it's different than what we had last week. The number of golfers who are studs is not as voluminous as it was for the WGC Mexico, but one guy who is in that group is Sergio Garcia, coming off of a sixth place finish last week. And Brandon, this is a course where he has done well in the past.
Yeah, he's. I think he qualifies as one of the voluminous studs here at 11,200 on FanDuel. Garcia leads the field in strokes gained tee to green at this course over the past 5 years. He is second in total strokes gained. His results, he has an 8th in 2014, then 31st, 2nd, 14th, and 33rd. Garcia finished 37th at the Genesis, then 6th at the WGC Mexico last week, gaining more than 12 total strokes gained with his approach in that span. That's actually 3 more full strokes with just his approach than any other golfer in this field over his past 8 rounds. Now, he is $11,200. He's expensive. He's not nearly as expensive as Justin Thomas at $13,000. There are, as you mentioned, other studs to pick from, but does Sergio do it for you this week?
To an extent, yes. I like the approach game that you've mentioned, how well he's been doing there recently. I think that, to me, makes me feel pretty good about him. The big question I have is where I view him relative to Ricky Fowler and Adam Scott and Gary Woodland, because I know I have him below Brooks Koepka. I know he's below Justin Thomas, even when you account for that huge salary. So I have to decide where I want to view Sergio relative to those guys. Let's talk about Adam Scott here quickly and then kind of talk about this second tier behind Justin Thomas more broadly, because Scott is there. He's $10,800. We have been pumping this guy for a long time, but the salary has gone up. I still think he could be worth it here at PGA National. He is a former winner here. He won first. He finished first back in 2016, shot a 65 and a 66 on Friday and Saturday that year. So went low at a really tough course. He has been here for the past 5 years, and Scott has finished 14th or better each time. So course knowledge, but also course excellence here. Scott is golfing well, Brandon. He has good stats. He has had success here. So let's take a look at this tier here. I'm going to put Brooks Koepka in here because I know how I feel about him, but I don't know how you feel about him. Let's go everyone outside of Justin Thomas. So Ricky Fowler through Adam Scott at 10-8. Where does Scott sit in that range for you, especially relative to Sergio, who we just discussed?
I would probably go Koepka, Garcia, Scott, Ricky, because he's so expensive.
Yeah.
Woodland last.
I agree. The hang up for me on Ricky is the salary.
It's just like, it's just enough ahead of like Brooks and Sergio that it gets a little bit tough.
Yeah.
To find that extra.
That's my, because like, there's nothing wrong with Ricky. Like, he won here in 2017. We know he got that win not too long ago, which is, you know, if Ricky Fowler's getting wins, like, that's a pretty much a game changer for sure. And he's done that both recently and at this course. But I think when I see that salary at 11.9, and I see guys like Koepka at 11.4, I have Koepka so far ahead of that. Like, I think that for me, it does go Koepka first in this tier. I probably go Adam Scott over Sergio, and I might put Woodland above Sergio too. But I think that's probably as far down as I would go with Garcia, is between Scott and Woodland, you know, like right there. And I think when I consider the salaries, with Sergio being $700 cheaper than Fowler, I'm probably going to wind up taking the savings more often than not there.
Yeah, so this is, I feel like this hasn't always been the case with like DFS golf, but this week I would be fine if you go the whole way down to Webb Simpson at $10,600 and go up. So Webb Simpson, Cam Smith, and all the guys we talked about, Adam Scott, Woodland, Garcia, Koepka, Fowler, Thomas. I wouldn't fault you, and I wouldn't try to really talk you out of any of those guys this week. Obviously JT's way out ahead.
Right.
You're giving me an as if you disagree.
I'm a bit more hesitant on the guys beneath Scott, specifically Webb and Cam Smith. I like them, but I don't like them. I think that they're a tier below Adam Scott, and given the fact that their salaries are so close to Woodland and Scott, who I like a lot, that makes me a bit more hesitant. Like Webb, you know, he finished 5th here last year. We know he's got the approach game. He can scramble. Cam Smith has been really good recently, 6th at the WGC Mexico, a couple of other top 15s not too long before that. So, like, they've been really good, but I think I have them a tier below Scott, and that makes me a little bit unwilling to really play them when there are other options like Scott and Woodland and Garcia at salaries that aren't that much more expensive.
Right. I mean, I would put them in their own tier at the bottom as well. Okay. The issue is who's really going to play Cam Smith and Webb Simpson if they can play the red hot Adam Scott or Gary Woodland, or spend down a little bit on, you know, the course horse Luke List. So I like them enough, not even accounting for the ownership, but I just expect them to fly in under the radar this week. So I'll make the case for Cam Smith, and I can probably make it for Webb by the end of the podcast as well.
All right, so let's move on here to some golfers who are not quite in that salary tier, who have done well at PGA National in the past. Starting off with Brendan Steele. Brandon, he is $9,300. What have you seen with Steele here in the past?
So he didn't play here a year ago, but he had strung together three straight top 15 finishes at PGA National. He was 14th, 14th, and 11th. Finished 33rd in 2014, so like that's very promising. His finishes before those strong outings were quite promising in years past. This year he enters with three straight missed cuts, but still was 10th, 14th, 39th, and 39th before those good outings here at the Honda. I'm not chasing Steele's course history, primarily because of the current form, and I think it's always a good reminder just to like dig deeper into course results and not just look at the finishes. So he's entering this with worse form than he had been whenever he posted those top 15s. All that being said, Steele is just 9,300. He ranks 7th in approach and 54th off the tee over the past 100 rounds, which is a pretty sizable sample. Pretty cheap. We're going to need some cheap options. We know that on this difficult course, he's shown the ability to come through. So overall, Jim, does Brendan Steele do enough for you this week?
Yeah, so Steele, he has distance, which I like, but the more recent approach play has been pretty terrible. He's missed three straight cuts in the PGA Tour. I think that, to me, is going to outweigh the course history, and I generally am not super enthused with the mid-range this week, but there are enough individual golfers around there. Like, you've got Jason Kokrak at 94, our guy Sung J.M. trying to buy a cut this week. He is $9,200. I like Trey Mullinax quite a bit at 91. So I have options in this range who I like more, and I don't think if I do wind up in this range, I necessarily want to go there with a golfer who has such blatant statistical and recent or current form concerns. So I agree with you that we should be bumping up the value of course history for this week. But I think when there are other options in this tier, like, you know, you could even spend up a little bit more and get to a guy like Lucas Glover who does have good course history too, I think I'd rather avoid someone like Steele, even though he does have what we're looking for from a course history perspective.
Yeah, I think Steele would honestly make my list by default if it weren't for Kokrak, as you mentioned. Sungjae Im going back there this week, he's 9,200. Trey Mullinax is on my list, but also Graham McDowell at 91. He and Mullinax are 91. So Steele's not like completely off my list by any means. I think that, you know, with the off the tee and approach play being passable over a larger sample, I like that. I actually dug into sort of, you know, does like 1 week or one event of data sort of help predict the next week? And there's pretty much no relationship that I found. Off to, you know, I got to dig in and make sure everything's lining up. But just because he's had three missed cuts, just because things aren't looking super great, the larger sample is pretty solid. We know that he can get it done here. So Steele's not completely off my list by any means.
Speaking of list, Brandon, let's talk about that course horse you mentioned, Luke List, because he almost got his first PGA Tour win here last year. So you knew we were going to talk about him. In that event, List was in a playoff with Justin Thomas, and List, shockingly, Brandon, sprayed his tee shot in the first hole of the playoff, and he lost. But hey, you know, second's still pretty solid. That came 2 years after he also finished 10th in 2016. That is all very good for Luke List. The problem is that he's $10,200. That is not a bargain salary by any means. We know he can be volatile. He finished 52nd here in 2017, but we know he can go long. We know he can go low here. Where do you sit with Luke List at $10,200 for this weekend?
I mean, I like List, but he's not really he's not standing out to me enough to embrace what I anticipate is going to be. And I talk about it a lot, but like the ownership, I think people are going to sort of go there. This is the Luke List seems to be like a fan favorite among DFS circles. This is one course where he's actually shown his upside.
Yeah.
And I think that's just enough for me. Like, I mean, he leads the field over the past 100 rounds in strokes gained off the tee, according to Fantasy National. He's 28th in approach, 9th in par 4 scoring. I have no issues with him other than the ownership and there being some other options. Although there, I guess there's one name I'm about to talk about who might take some ownership away from List as well.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of my concern about Luke List is because people are generally aware that he is volatile, but they also know that he has upside. And he showed that a lot last year. He had, you know, a bunch of top five finishes. But I think that when you have the course history angle with a guy who people, I mean, some people have like never again Luke List, and I get that, but like I haven't checked out the fan share tags yet this morning. But jeez. If I were putting money down, I would say he's probably top five in tags.
Yeah, he's tied for fourth right now.
Yeah, so I win that bet. Pay me, cash me outside, please. But like, I think that that kind of concerns me. And the other part about it too is if I spend up for Justin Thomas, like I can get up to back into that mid range at 10,000 or so. But I don't. I kind of have to, you know, spend down quite a bit to get there. And there are some very low salary golfers I like, but. You know, $400 is a lot between Luke List and Byung-Hun An. I probably would rather just go Byung-Hun An and not go as far down on the other end. So I always love Luke List. He is always a golfer I like. But if he's going to be popular, and it seems like he should be, while carrying a salary at $10,200, I'm not going to go out of my way to use him. I think that's the way I'd phrase it.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I can see the case. It's a fair price for him, but yeah. we know what he can do with the putter. We know that he's not a sure thing, and that's like the biggest thing to keep in mind in golf is there aren't sure things other than maybe Justin Thomas this week, but
right.
I think it's enough.
And if Luke List wins and I'm not using him, I'll still be happy because he's a unicorn and I love him.
I won't. I'd tilt my face. If Joaquin Neiman wins this week and I don't use him, I'm going to like tilt off the earth. So.
Well, that's why you don't do the if I don't use him part, Brandon. You always get shares of Neiman just in case. Like that's true. How it goes. We're not going to play that game.
So that he can tank every lineup he's in.
Yeah. I mean, if he tanks 90% of my roster, I still got that 10%, Brandon. It's still there. It still counts. So we're good. Let's take a look at current form now and talk about that golfer you were alluding to as someone who is around $10,000 who could potentially take away some of the popularity that Luke List, at least in my estimation, should carry for this week. That guy is Michael Thompson. And we talk about current form, doesn't get a whole lot better than Michael Thompson, especially for a guy who is $10,100. Brandon, what do you see with Michael Thompson here recently?
Yeah, so he's spendy at that price of $10,100. He's 136 in the world golf rankings, so it just doesn't really match up. I mean, the betting odds are sort of in line with his price, but he's been so hot in 2019. Since a missed cut at the RSM, he's finished a very nice 69th at the Sony Open, 9th at the Desert Classic, 13th at the Farmers Insurance Open, 10th at Pebble Beach, 7th at the Genesis. Sometimes that could mean just above baseline putting, but he's actually 5th among this field in strokes gained tee to green since the start of 2019. He is 6th over the past 3 months. He's also gained strokes tee to green in 73% of his 20 rounds in that split. So he's not necessarily boosted by like big rounds or just super hot putting. He's been consistent with tee to green. He finished 24th here last year. And according to fanshare.sports.com, a very good way to track sentiment and just who's getting talked about, Thompson does have more tags than Luke List to start the week.
So you're saying it's a thing?
Well, he's also, I mean, he's $10,100 on FanDuel. He's a little cheaper, you know, some other spots. So
sure. Then that will inflate things, for sure. And you have to keep that context in mind. But I think with Thompson, I get it because – like, if I'm looking at these two guys, looking between Thompson and List, if I want someone I would rather use at high ownership, it's probably Thompson. But the problem is if I want someone who can blow up, I probably prefer List. So like from looking cash games, I want Thompson. Tournaments, I probably want List, even though I don't think I need to care about ownership because they'll probably both be roughly the same from a popularity perspective. So I think between the two, I prefer Thompson for cash games, List for tournaments. But like I'm also not opposed to using Thompson at higher ownership just because I do think he's a bit less volatile. And I think that that's a valuable asset to have. So I like Thompson for sure. But it's kind of hard for me to decide if I'd rather take him over List in a tournament, knowing that they'll both probably be fairly popular.
Yeah. I mean, so it's tough. If you start with Justin Thomas, I should have done this as you were talking. If you start with Justin Thomas and you roster both of them, you have 8,900 for your final three golfers. I'm fine with some golfers in that range, but I don't love it. It's a pretty top-heavy.
A comparison for you. You could either go Justin Thomas with Luke List and with Michael Thompson, or you could go Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka. And yes, it's four golfers as opposed to three remaining at $8,900, but it's the same average salary. And I don't think that's a big enough difference. Like if you give me like a trade, Luke List and Michael Thompson for Brooks Koepka, I'm going to take the Brooks half of that every time.
Yeah, because odds are one of Thompson will either cool off or List right. will just blow up. But I mean, the double stud lineup worked last week with DJ and Rory, as I found out the hard way. But again, this is a tough course. There is a cut.
Yeah.
If you take too many low-end guys, you could be setting yourself up for some disappointment on the weekend.
So I think that my goal this week will be to find reliable low-end guys, and those aren't super abundant. Like they're yeah. low salaried for a reason, and I got to admit that. But I think that there are some golfers who are decently dependable who have lower salaries. And we'll talk about some of those guys as we go along here. But I think that you can do that. So for me, my default roster construction will be Thomas plus a guy in that second tier. And if I do that, I'm probably not going to be using much of List or Thompson. But I think they're both very much in play if you have a different roster construction and do wind up going there. Let's talk about one golfer who's a little bit cheaper than that. It's $9,700. That is Lucas Glover. And Brandon, we talked about Lucas Glover going into Pebble Beach, and he came through there with a seventh place finish, and it continued a pretty solid trend for him. Now, that one did come on the heels of a missed cut at the Waste Management, but before that, he was 12th at the Desert Classic, and now if you look longer, he has now finished in the top 20 in seven of his past eight events, dating back to last year's Web.com Tour Championship, and that does include three top 10 finishes. So some upside there for Glover. He has back-to-back top 25s. You're a PGA National. So I think Glover is very interesting at $9,700, a little bit cheaper than guys like Luke List and Michael Thompson. I think it's more realistic. I wind up in this salary tier than theirs. So where do you set on Lucas Glover, Brandon, at $9,700?
I'm kind of lukewarm on him. Lucas warm on him. Yeah. I mean, when I combine like short-term and long-term form, he ranks 12th in like a stats-only sort of model for me. He's a little bit below average putting on Bermuda, but not terribly so. And I mean, he's also got the two top 21s here the past 2 years. I feel like I need to have a stronger take, but like I can't go as far as to say that I'm going to play a lot of Lucas Glover, but like I really see the case for him. I just think that honestly, I will be spending because I'm going to try to play a lot of Justin Thomas this week, even right. at that price. It's going to be hard to live in that range unless I do sort of plug in, you know, some of those low $8,000 guys. Then I would have enough to go with Glover, and if that's the case, I'm staring at a lineup with $9,700 left. I will be fine taking Lucas Glover.
Other guys in this tier include some golfers we'll discuss later on, but let's, you know, briefly discuss them here. We got Byung-Hun Ahn at $9,800. Russell Knox is $9,700. Compared to those guys, is Glover measuring up well? Because I love Ahn, but there's a big difference because Ahn has not played here, whereas Glover has, you know, again, as you said, two straight top 21s, and he's been here longer than that. So where does Glover sit relative to guys like Byung-Hun Ahn for you this week? Or Billy Horschel at 9.92?
So Horschel, he's got what? Cut, fourth, eighth, cut here. On had a fifth here last year. Knox, cut, 26th, third, second, going backwards. I mean, again, not that I'm letting that dictate all of my decisions, but I am sort of using it as a bit of a tiebreaker. But among the four, it's super close from a stats perspective. I would put On first still.
Yeah.
For me, then I might be okay with Glover, Horschel, Knox.
Yeah, I think that's probably the order I go into. My spreadsheet, I didn't put the hyphen in Byung-Hun On, so I missed him getting a fifth last year.
The worst.
Now he's back.
Yeah.
He and Sung J-M, you know, messing up all the spreadsheets. But yep, absolutely. Sung Gung occasionally does. Not as often, though. Yeah. But On, I think, is also my first one. And then I go Glover after that. So this is I think this tier is just as good as the List and Thompson tier, but you save a little bit of salary in using them. So
yeah, and then like you can kind of go, and I know you're not like as big on Garcia, but like, I don't know, maybe you do Koepka, like Scott, and then just sort of hug that 10,000 range. Like,
I think if you're fading Thomas, that's the way to go.
Yeah, if I'm fading Justin Thomas, that's probably a good point. If I'm fading Justin Thomas, I'm going to have one of the other sort of studs of like 10,800 and above, but probably go more balanced because if you're playing JT, you're going to be loading up on the cheaper guys. So if I'm going fully wildly different from construction, I'd go balanced.
Like, I think that Justin Thomas just dictates entirely your roster construction this week because he's $13,000. Like, if you go with him, you're going stars and scrubs. Like, that's just the way it has to be. But I think there is value to going balanced because if the popular value plays blow up, you're going to avoid them. So I think we're both taking this from the perspective of we want to use a lot of JT, and we'll talk about how much in the section on bookmaker info because he's 5-1. We'll get to that in just a second. First, let's talk about a potential scrub on the Stars and Scrubs construction. That's Hank Lebioda. And Brandon, if we look at really recent current form, Lebioda is looking pretty decent, and he's just $7,700. So what do you see when you look at him, especially recently?
Yeah, he could be a spreadsheet ruiner, Henry Hank Lebioda, but we got to take this with a grain of salt, and I feel like sometimes I don't talk enough about like super punt plays to help us out, and again, if you're playing Justin Thomas, you're going to have to be at least somewhat open to the idea of playing a guy priced at 7,700 on FanDuel, and that is Lebioda. He has no... he's just the great avatar for now, which I think helps out with ownership. Not that he's going to be highly owned anyway, but I mean, he was born in 1994, so he's 25. He lost 6 strokes total in his PGA debut at the Safeway, then half a stroke at Sanderson Farms, missing both cuts there. He did miss the cut at the Puerto Rico Open last week, so keep that in mind. He was even and then 4 over, but since then, since his 2 first missed cuts and excluding the missed cut last week, he had gained strokes in all 5 events, making 4 cuts. The putter, as is almost always the case, not great for a young player, but he's been gaining strokes off the tee, gaining strokes around the green, which I'm not really emphasizing a lot this week because if you're missing the greens and regulation, you're probably in hazard and you're probably not going to contend. But we don't really need him to contend. If we can get a guy at 7,700 to push through the cut, that could help out a lot. So, I mean, the approach play for Lebioda is not great, but I think that he sets up as someone who could grind out a decent outing at a very, very low price, and it really does help out. So I think the price for me is enticing enough where I would consider pairing him with Justin Thomas in some lineups just to try to get him to push through the cut and give me access to Justin Thomas.
Yeah, does I think that that's...
Does he do anything for you? No.
I don't know if I need to go down that far as the issue. Because
maybe you don't.
Like, if I go with Thomas and Koepka, I'm at 8-9, and I think there are enough guys in the mid 8,000s who I like. Like, Sung Gung is 8-5, HV3 is 86. I like both those guys a lot. And that gets me back up into the 9,000 range to go with golfers who are higher floor, steadier options. Also, Brandon, Kyle Stanley is $7,900. I know his current form is poo. Like, he's got cut, and then a 58th in a no cut event last weekend. But, like, at $7,900, they're trying really hard to pull me back in here. So I think I guess I'm not super – I don't feel the need to go down that far personally. I think that's what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it really was an attempt to sort of dig into the sub-8K range, which we almost never really talk about.
Right.
I mean, he's 300-1 to win on Betfair. Lebioda, that is. So I don't – I guess I don't have to go there either. Justin Thomas and Koepka, I mean, I'll talk about some low 8,000 guys. So yeah. I guess we don't have to get crazy. Maybe you're talking me out of some crazy lineups, Jim.
Your guy, Lebioda, or your other guy, Anders Albertsen, with his four straight missed cuts at $7,500. Who you got?
Anders Albertsen is like my hero, but I would go Lebioda this week.
All right, cool. I'd go Albertsen. We can do a little head-to-head on that one. Let's talk about a guy who's a little bit more expensive. Yeah,
who misses the cut by the fewest strokes.
We had like a Josh Allen bet at some point during the NFL season. I don't think it was Case Keenum? I think it was Case Keenum. That was the saddest
bet. Yeah.
Not even close. Josh Allen got hurt, like left before halftime. So,
yeah.
Trey Mullinax. There's some shame.
Didn't we bet on someone who got pulled in the third quarter? Maybe not, but I thought that was
I talked to Blake Bortles in the week he got benched. Does that count?
Maybe we bet on that, or like,
yeah,
either way.
I really don't want to think about Blake Bortles. It's February. I can be devoid of him maybe forever, honestly, so we'll see. But a guy who has a little bit of maybe some volatility to his game is Trey Mullinax, and he always has had the distance, but it seems, Brandon, kind of like he's been putting together a more complete package recently. He's made the cut at all five events he has been to since January 1st, and that does include three straight top 25s heading into this weekend. If we look at Fantasy National, Mullinax has gained strokes on his approach game in six of his past eight events, and he gained 6.8 strokes in approach at the Farmers alone. So a really good event there not too long ago. $9,100. Brandon, are you buying into this hot streak for Trey Mullinax at $9,100?
I'm buying into it enough for my tournament lineups. I would not go there in cash games. There's someone else at 9,100 I prefer straight up. That's Graham McDowell.
Yeah.
For like a cashier format. But, I mean, Mullinax, we know, has that, as you mentioned, sort of volatility. He's got an imbalanced like ball striking profile. He's fifth in strokes gained off the tee over the past 100 rounds, but 91st in approach. That's not the order I would prefer them to be in. I'd rather have the better approach play, but he also struggled here in his missed cut in 2017. He was outside the top 110 in both approach and putting. But even with all that said, I think that under the right circumstances, he has like top 15 potential here at a low price, and that keeps him on the radar enough for tournaments this week.
I agree that I would likely not be going there for cash games, just because I think I agree with you. Like, McDowell is interesting for sure. And Sungjae Im is there too. And like, I think I'd rather go with them for cash games, but for tournaments, I think that Mullinax, you know, he's a young guy, so I think it makes sense. He's just 26. We could see him actually improving his approach game, and that would make him a really fun play at $9,100. So for tournaments, I will make that assumption that these gains in the approach game are legit. And if I assume that, he is a baller play at 91. So he will be not a core play for me in tournaments, but a fringe core play where I could see him being on, you know, 40% of rosters or somewhere in that territory. And I think I'd be pretty okay with that if that did wind up being the case for this weekend. Let's take a look at what the bookmakers are saying about this event, and it's all about Justin Thomas. He is the clear-cut favorite. He is 5-1 on Betfair. Then you got Brooks Koepka, who is 9-1, Ricky Fowler at 10-1, then a tier drop-off down to Sergio Garcia and Adam Scott. They are both 14-1, then another tier down to Gary Woodland and Webb Simpson, who are 20-1. If you round out the top group at 25-1, you got Cam Smith and Daniel Berger. So Brandon, Justin Thomas, 5-1 to win. I can't say I blame them. So what are you doing with Justin Thomas this weekend?
Yeah, usually this is a spot where I say I'm going to just like fade the chalky pick, but it's really hard to do that. I think this week I wouldn't back anybody at 5-1 in a tournament of any size, really, especially one this large and this difficult. All it takes is one errant shot to sort of drop out. But for DFS, I mean, he's going to be, he's, I have him first in approach, par fours, bogey avoidance and opportunities gained, which is a great Fantasy National stat. It's like fringes and greens under regulation and birdies within 15 feet, like birdie chances. So he's getting himself in the position to dominate. I feel like he's been knocking on the door these past few weeks for a win. So right. I really think that your lineup construction should start with Justin Thomas in pretty much any format outside of a really large field tournament.
Yeah, I think with Justin Thomas, like, you can discuss fading him if there are good alternatives, but like there's no dust, and I'm not saying they're bad alternatives, like Ricky Fowler and Brooks Koepka and Sergio Garcia are all amazing, but like there's no Dustin Johnson. There is no Ricky or Rory McIlroy. There's no Justin Rose here this weekend. There's no Xander. Yeah, exactly. No Xander. No Tony Finau either. We'll get him in there too. But like, I think if those guys were here and JT were 13,000, I'd be like, cool, I'll just fade him. That's fine. But there isn't another golfer who I view as being in his tier right now who is at this event. So I think that that pushes me to use JT. And I think even at $13,000, he's like a 70 to 75% guy for me from an exposure perspective in tournaments. And I still leave myself that 25% if he busts or doesn't blow up, where I could still potentially have a tournament winning lineup. And I think that's enough for me. So I'm probably going 75-ish percent. What about you?
Yeah, I could see that. I'll probably honestly be a little bit, I mean, he's going to be 40% owned, I would think.
Right. So you get 35% on the field.
Yeah. I'd probably go around 2/3, maybe, okay. Maybe 70%, but yeah, it sort of pushes you into a bit of a certain lineup construction.
Yeah.
But I do think that even with that, if we do plug in Brooks, there's enough in the 8,000 range. I guess we don't have to get as crazy and play, Hank Lebioda at 77. So I think it's possible. So I think there are a lot of paths, I guess.
Are you worried about that main path? Combo of JT and Koepka being too popular? Because I think that for me, that's kind of the no-brainer way to go. But I guess I don't know what everyone else will be doing. But I that's my one concern, is that combo together could be a tad popular.
Yeah, it's possible. I think in that case, like, that could be a, if you're building, let's just say 10 lineups and you're doing JT and Brooks in six or something, maybe one of those I'd put in like a Lebioda or someone who's going to be super low owned. That way that three man combination will not have quite as, and this is more of a strategy for like your huge field tournaments, not sure, like your 20 mans or your three mans, nothing like that. But right, I think that would be something I'd be more open to. So I think, yeah, I do think that, for me, if I'm just trying to build the best lineup I can, I'm going to try to start with JT and Brooks and see if I can make that work and feel comfortable with my other four. So I do think that other people will start there as well.
And if you are looking, and this is always, I want to confirm the things that I want to do. I just look for data that will confirm me. Yeah. If I'm looking for that, if you go to Fanshare right now, fansharesports.com, check out their tags. Brooks Koepka is actually not that high relative to, ooh, a lot of other guys in his tier. He's below Sergio, he's below Adam Scott, below Ricky Fowler, Gary Woodland. And the sentiment around Brooks Koepka is not super positive. I'm going to talk about it in player picks. I think based on that, I still think he'll be very popular because he's Brooks freaking Koepka in a weird field. But I'm not as worried about that construction as I was before I checked that out. So let's talk about some movement here, Brandon. We've seen on Betfair, which golfers have you seen tracking either up or down?
Not a whole lot, really. Adam Scott improved from 16 to 14. Daniel Berger from 33 to 25. And Billy Horschel from 40 to 30.
So Billy Horschel, you poo-pooed him last week, and he came through, Brandon, with a 45th place finish in a no-cut event. Any interest in him for you this week?
So, I mean, I think I ranked him like fourth out of that four-man group that you threw out. in that range. He's just another one where the stats have been so good for so long that I guess maybe there's some fatigue, but
sure.
I almost never really feel like, oh man, I can't believe I didn't play Billy Horschel this week.
Right. I felt that way. I think during the summer there may have been a stretch where that occurred.
Yeah, because I was like hesitant. Yeah, hesitant to like buy into the stats and like, oh, I should have trusted the stats, but
yeah, I think because you've got guys like Byung-Hun Ahn there at the same price, Lucas Glover, even Knox to a lesser extent. Like, I prefer Horschel over Knox by a pretty decent margin. But like, there are good alternatives. So I think that Billy Horschel is not a guy I'm going to prioritize this week, despite the odds improving. Looking at some value plays here, Brandon, which lower salary golfers have odds that are that stand out to you and are noteworthy here?
Our boy is back. Jason Kokrak is 55-1. I think we're both in on him at 9,400.
When have we not been?
Yeah. Russell Henley, Charles Schwartzel, Sung J M, Graham McDowell are all 66-1. I like Sung J M. I like Graham McDowell. Probably not going to get to Henley or Schwartzel. Ryan Palmer, Trey Mullinax are both 80. We like Mullinax. CT Pond's also 80, but he is just 8,600. The other two are above 9,000. And then if you look below 9,000, we have Bud Cauley, JT Poston, Dylan Fratelli, Taylor Gooch, Kevin Tway, Harold Varner, and Kyle Stanley are all 100-1. Of those five, or six, I guess, I like Gooch and Varner the most.
Love me some Harold Varner III. We'll talk about him later on. I want to talk to you about Ryan Palmer, though, because statistically he's interesting. Over the past 36 rounds, he's 25th in distance, 10th in approach, but really bad. Scramble, he's 123rd there. He missed the cut here last year, but was 37th and 26th the 2 years before that. Had a 13th place finish not too long ago. Palmer is 92. Are you going to be off of him because you have McDowell, Im, and Mullinax there, or does Palmer fit what you're looking for at all?
I think he did, but according to Pat Mayo, since 2007, Palmer is the most over par player at the Bear Trap. He's 43 over in 34 rounds. So I think that stat alone is enough just to scare me off and sort of want to avoid that meltdown.
And you know that's in his head. Like, you know he's aware of that.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about psychology a lot, but it matters. Like, these guys are humans. And like, if you know you're 43 over a 37 round / just over 100 hole sample, that's not great, Bob.
Yeah, it's gotta be something that bugs you. So I think as much as like he's fine for me from like a modeling standpoint, I'm just probably not going there.
And there are alternatives we'll talk about in just 1 second in the player picks. But first, weather, not a big concern here. And I mentioned this before, but both last year and in 2016, conditions were pretty windy at PGA National. It's a Florida course, so that makes sense. But that is not the case this year. As of right now, on dark sky weather, it looks like the wind will be below 8 miles per hour Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And the only time it'll get a little bit gusty with wind speeds above 10 miles per hour will be late in the day on Sunday. And if your golfers are golfing then, you're probably doing okay to begin with. So I would not worry about factoring in wind for this week. And it may play a little bit easier than it has in the past because the wind will not be as big of a factor. Still a very difficult course without that. But just throwing that out there. But maybe not quite as difficult as it has been in 2018 and 2016. With that said, let's dive into our player picks for the Honda Classic. Brandon, who are you focusing on in the top pricing range for this weekend?
So I like Sergio, I guess I should say, at 11,200. He's 14-1 to win on Betfair. He grades out top 12 in both ball striking stats, so strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach over the past 100 rounds. He ranks 6th in strokes gained on par 4s in that span, which is, again, very, very vital on this par 70. Over the past 5 years, again, I already mentioned this, but he leads the field in strokes gained tee to green at PGA National. I think that gets extra weight this week. I liked what, you know, he was, what, 6th last week, if I recall correctly off the top of my head.
Yes.
I think that's a week where we can buy into Garcia if we're if or including the, I don't know what I'm trying to say, whether we're rostering in JT or not, I think Sergio could sort of, Sergio could be on the list.
And as we mentioned, like, you can fit in Justin Thomas plus a second stud. And I think that Sergio is on that list for sure. So interested for sure. I prefer Koepka, who we'll talk about in just a bit. But first, let's talk about Justin Thomas. We've been talking about why we love him or that we love him, but let's talk about why. Part of it for me is because I don't feel the need to use guys in the middle tier. Like, I'm okay passing over it. That makes me like Thomas. At 13K, I think that he's fully justifiable. He has a blend of all three things we look at. He leads the field in approach over the past 36 rounds per Fantasy National. He is the defending champ at this course. He was third here in 2016, and he has finished in the top three in three of his five events since January 1st, 9th, and 16th in the other two. So I'll still pay what it takes to get Thomas. I think that it's not bold by any means, but I think that it's worth reiterating. This dude is $13,000 for a reason, and I will pay that. So let's move on here to our second picks in the higher pricing pool, Brandon. Who else stands out to you above 10-5 or so?
So Adam Scott stands out to me for sure, but I think the problem is that he stands out to a lot of people.
Correct.
According to Fantasy National's calculated ownership, specifically for FanDuel, he leads the pack right now by a good margin. So I think that at 10,800, Adam Scott is going to be justifiably popular. So I am okay pivoting to Cameron Smith at 10,700. He is 25-1 to win. He's transitioning from POA. This applies to both Scott and Smith, actually. Transitioning from POA over the past few weeks to a more neutral putting split of Bermuda. I just think that Smith is a sort of a preemptive alternative option from Scott. Smith is 8th in par 4 scoring, 15th in bogey avoidance over the past 100 rounds. He's got some of the best style on tour, and I think that he'll go pretty much completely overlooked as well. So that helps me because I approach things primarily from like a tournament standpoint. Mm-hmm. If you're playing head, if you have to pick one for like your safer option, obviously go Adam Scott. But I think Smith has some sneaky upside here.
Well, the biggest appeal of Adam Scott is that he has that great approach game. He's third in the tour the past, or third in the field over the past 36 rounds in approach, but Cam Smith is fifth. Like, that's not a big difference. Smith has been a better scrambler recently, too. So I think that's a very justifiable pivot. The thing that I like is that you mentioned that Adam Scott is projected to carry a lot of ownership. That means it's fewer people using Brooks Koepka. So let's talk about Brooks Koepka here. And, you know, he was just all right last week. He finished 27th, but in this field, which is less of a top-heavy field, I really think he could rock and roll. He leads the field in distance the past 36 rounds. He is 6th in scrambling per Fantasy National. Not as good in the approach, but he's still 33rd there. That's not overly terrible. And I think that when you look at the tiers of the golfers in this field, the fall-off after guys like Scott is pretty substantial. So I want to make sure in most lineups I have Justin Thomas paired with one of the golfers in this salary tier. To me, Brooks is the number one guy in this tier. Brandon, I think you mentioned before that he is also number one for you. Is that correct?
Yeah. I feel like I've said upside a lot this podcast, but if we're trying to match what Justin Thomas can do, to me, it's really Brooks.
Yeah.
As the most likely to win this thing by five strokes. I think it's Justin Thomas obviously is the most likely. Then I would say it's Brooks. So from that standpoint, I would rank Brooks second, but I guess for a safety, safer. I don't know what I'm trying to say, Jim. I would still go Garcia, I think, over Brooks from a cash game standpoint. Even though that's a bit of a, it feels wrong to say.
I don't think I would, but I understand why you would.
I never know what Brooks is doing.
Yeah.
It's kind of awkward. I don't know if he cares.
Like, do you need to care at this point if you're Brooks Koepka? Like, you've got it made. So, like, I don't think he needs to care, but I'm hoping he does. Do it for me, Brooks. Do it for me. Let's move down to the mid-pricing tier for this weekend at the Honda Classic. Who do you look at, Brandon, once you get below $10,000?
I have Byung-Hun On penciled in. Did we talk about him too much already?
No, we've barely talked about him. We've talked about him in passing because we talked about him relative to Glover. mentioned we both like him. We didn't say why.
Okay. Well, I like Emiliano Grillo as well at 10,300. We've been fixated on Luke List and Michael Thompson at 10,200 and 10,100 respectively. I think Grillo is a pretty nice play, but I'll talk about Ben on. He grades out top 13 in both of the ball striking stats over the past 100 rounds. He's also top 18 in par fours and bogey avoidance over the past 100 rounds. So I think that's a really solid overall profile. He's not a good POA putter, and he's not particularly a good Bermuda putter, but it's a little less terrible on the Bermuda surface this week. I think he's a good bounce back candidate after a 45th a week ago. So I like on at 98.
You mentioned the long-term stats, but even over the past 36 rounds, he's 12th in distance and 21st in approach on Fantasy National, and he is 35th in scrambling. So he checks every statistical box that I want. Fifth year last year, as you mentioned. Like, I think he's a really good play. And I think that I have him well above Horschel. I have him above Lucas Glover, who we'll talk about right now. But I think that on is a really fun play. Let's talk about Glover here. We talked about the current form earlier, but he checks the other two boxes too. Over the past 36 rounds, Glover ranks 30th or better among golfers in the field in distance, approach, and scrambling, my three big stats this week. He is the only golfer in the field in the top 30 in all three categories. He has also finished 17th and 21st here the past 2 years. He was fourth here in 2013. So I think when I look at this tier, this salary tier just below 10,000, I go on one, Glover two, everybody else, including Horschel behind them. Is that the same vibe you get?
You asked me this same exact question before. I think I went on Glover, Horschel, Knox.
Do you put those two like in a tier above Horschel? I think that's the main thing I want to ask.
I put Ben on at the top.
Okay.
And I think Glover's far enough away from on that I'd probably just rather take the savings on like Jason Kokrak and spend up somewhere else if I can.
That's fair. So let's move down the salary tier a little bit to Graham McDowell, Brandon, $9,100. You mentioned that you like him before. What draws you towards Graham McDowell?
Yeah, I mean, the finishes have been up and down. 46th cut, 5th, 14th cut. And his finishes sort of match his tee to green game. So he hasn't been, I mean, you kind of get what he does tee to green. So it's not super inflated by just the putting. And then you know, the tee to green's always been terrible. He's a plus putter on Bermuda. He carries a pretty balanced but not great stats profile. In all of my five key stats, he's between 50th and 70th, which doesn't sound great, but without any glaring red flags, that's actually pretty solid given the price of 9,100. 66-1 to win on Betfair, not terrible by any means. He actually owns some restaurants in the area, so I think that this is sort of like
Narrative Street.
Yeah.
Justin Thomas is from here too. Well, lives here, I guess now. I think like everyone's like from this area. It's Florida, why not?
I think Justin Thomas he doesn't qualify for any narratives.
Yeah, that's fair. Graham McDowell, would you go him in cash? We mentioned not using Trey Mullinax in cash. Yeah. Is McDowell your favorite guy in this tier for cash games?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I like Sungjae Im fine. We're not talking about him.
He's just... I like him. It's just I have a hard time trusting him in cash with those back-to-back missed cuts.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. I don't think it's been that bad.
Right.
Could be wrong, but I feel like I dug into it, and it wasn't like... So your last 3.6 strokes putting at the Genesis, and then Pebble Beach.
Was he at Pebble Beach?
Yeah, we don't know what he's doing there.
Pebble Beach was the one where he... I think he was good on Thursday and then like, well, whatever day they played it. Round one, he's good. And then he like ejected in round two, like blew up in the most negative sense you possibly could. And I think he kind of rallied Saturday. This could be totally wrong, but I'm trying to remember what happened. I was totally unplugged, but like I was tilting as I checked my phone and kept seeing Sungjae Im just blow up.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how some people can like remember off the top of their head like what everyone did and in what round over like recent events. It just escapes me.
Yeah. I think I remember him having a good round. So maybe I'm overblowing it, but regardless, I do think that McDowell is probably the safer choice there. Let's talk about another guy we both enjoy. That's Jason Kokrak. I know, a shocker. We're talking about Jason Kokrak here on the Heat Check, but he does rank eighth in the field and approach over the past 36 rounds, which is great for someone who has a salary as low as Kokrak's at $9,400. He pairs that with a 32nd place ranking in distance. He's also 50th in scrambling. So I think that when you look at Kokrak statistically, there are no red flags. He has not been here since 2016. He did miss the cut that year, but he has been here before. I like his profile enough to use him at $9,400. He's had good finishes recently too. Brandon, your thoughts on Jason Kokrak at $9,400?
I just basically love him.
Yeah.
This week. I mean, that's not like he's my favorite play, but price considered, I think that he's a standout option. And, you know, if we do that, I'm a little sidetracked because it seems like we're higher on Brooks than a lot of other people are. From like an ownership perspective standpoint.
Is that because of the narrative of like, this guy has no reason to care, or what's the thought process there? Do you think not a big enough tournament?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that it's like, this isn't really a driver heavy course, or most people are discounting like distance, and that could be it. But I mean, if you do the JT Brooks start, then you go from, you know, you have your 8,900. If you go with Kokrak, you're down to 87, which isn't that big of a difference. So, like, I think he fits that build. If you're okay with some of these guys we're going to talk about in the 8,000 range.
And I am.
Yeah. I think that he fits well here.
All righty. So let's move on to the low salary plays. Get those guys below $9,000 who could potentially help you build a Justin Thomas plus Brooks Koepka lineup. Brandon, starting off with Taylor Gooch, mentioned him in passing before. What puts you on Gooch here at $8,600?
Yeah, I think he's 87. I can't type and read. But
he is 87. You're right. That's a good word for it. Never again.
Don't ever trust my notes. So 87 for Gooch. He's 100-1 to win, which is pretty nice given his given that price. He could find trouble off the tee. He's 118th in strokes gained off the tee over the past 100 rounds, but he's 38th in approach. He's had positive Bermuda splits in his career over 41 rounds. That's enough for me to want to buy in to what Gooch can do whenever things click. He missed a cut here last year, and you'll understand why after I tell you his ranks and these stats, but he was 122nd in strokes gained off the tee, 90th in approach. So again, you're not going to make many cuts doing that. But he's bookended a third-place finish at the Farmers and a fourth-place finish at the Desert Classic with two missed cuts on either end of that. So very volatile, but when you're dipping below 9,000 on FanDuel, you're not really finding too much safety.
And volatile is not bad if they can get to the top end of the volatility, and Gooch has done so a couple of times recently. Yes. So I think that's acceptable in this range. I want to talk about Harold Varner III, who is 86, so $100 cheaper than Gucci. He has actually also had some cuts, missed cuts too. He missed two of his past three, and that's a concern, but the stats are still good, and he's posting really good finishes when he does make the cut. If we look at between those two missed cuts, Varner was 10th at the Waste Management. Two events before that, he was 18th at the Desert Classic. And now, if we look at him, in the events he's made the cut, he's made the top 25 in the past seven events. In the events he's made the cut, he's missed three cuts in that time, but if he gets through, the dude's golden. He is 9th in the field in distance the past 36 rounds, 43rd in approach, and 20th in scrambling per Fantasy Nationals. So I will take on the risk that comes with that here because Varner has upside and has the ability to finish really well. So I like Harold Varner III. Brandon, any HV3 for you this weekend?
Yeah, I like him. I wrote him up on NumberFire in the primer. He's sort of graded out well, strokes gained off the tee in two of his three tries here. Actually, was 21st in strokes gained off the tee in 2016 when he missed the cut, and he was 51st in approach. Just hasn't putted well here at all, and that's kind of a red flag. But I mean, what can you really do? He's a negative putter on, I think, probably every surface, but he is a negative putter on Bermuda. So it's really everything but the putting for me this week. So he does enough at that price to go there because, again, you're not getting a slam dunk here at 8,600.
All right, let's move on to our second low salary golfers this weekend, Brandon. Who else are you targeting here below 9,000?
So CT Pond, someone I'm going to have to dig back into. I think he makes a lot of sense at his price. He's actually 80-1 to win.
Him in passing before we close it off. I agree.
Yeah. But Vaughn Taylor, 8,400. He's 150-1 to win. He is 21st in approach, third in opportunities gained, which again is birdie opportunities from within 15 feet, plus greens and fringes under regulation. So just guys who put themselves in position to score with sort of factoring out whether they converted the putts or not. That is courtesy of Fantasy National. But he finished 59th here last year, was 36th in strokes gained tee to green at 8,400. If I'm not playing Hank Lebioda, I think Vaughn Taylor is probably the lowest that I'm going to go.
No Kyle Stanley? What about Chris Stroud?
I gave Sorry, up on Stanley. No, I recommended him last week, I think, because it makes sense, but mercy.
He's been terrible.
Yeah. It's like at some point it's got to correct, but maybe it just never does.
Any Chris Stroud interest for you? He's 82.
Chris Stroud. Sorry, yeah. Kyle Stanley's worst surface is Bermuda. Where are you at?
Not that Stroud? We need any justification to think that Kyle Stanley's a negative putter.
Yeah, I just, you know, I like
that. That's his like worst surface. We're not going to be too good.
Stroud doesn't necessarily do a lot for me. The problem, I guess, is the par four scoring. Mm-hmm. The opportunities gained. I mean, I could see the case here. He's got a 12th here in 2014, a 33rd in 2018, two top tens of late, but maybe I could, maybe.
Okay. Keith Let's Mitchell. Talk about Sung Gung.
Keith Mitchell.
Keith Mitchell, your boy.
8,200. He's
hard pass. Oh, mercy. Yeah. You're not going to talk me into it. Nope. Not happening. Sung Gung, you can talk me into him, though, because he is $8,500, and the approach game seems to be trending up of late, and I think that is what kind of draws me here. He is 20th in the field in approach over the past 36 rounds per Fantasy National. If you look at their site, you can see individual events, and Gung has gained more than 2.5 strokes on his approach in 3 of his 5 events since January 1st. He's not great off the tee. This is not his best putting surface, but I do like him enough to use him, $8,500. Joaquin Niemann, Brandon, we mentioned him jokingly before, but I actually think I'm going to use him. He lost, I think, 4.8 strokes putting in his most recent event, but still finished 44th. So, like, he does the other stuff well enough where he can still, at sometimes, accidentally overcome his putting. So I think that guys like Gung, CT Pond, Harold Varner III, Niemann, all those guys give me enough confidence in going with a very top-heavy approach and not thinking that I'm totally ruining my lineups by doing so.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it like we talk a lot about lineup construction because it's very important when you're building FanDuel lineups. Maybe this is the week where you plug in Justin Thomas and then plug in whoever you like most, whether it's Brooks or Ricky or Sergio or Woodland or Scott, and then you just sort of rotate in all these guys who could like Joaquin Niemann's ball striking is good enough where he could finish top 10 if he could ever make a putt.
Just make one, man. Just one.
he's never actually made a putt yet.
Yeah, he's actually chipped in every time.
He puts it off the green. Yeah.
That's what he does. It's actually an approach shot, technically, after he hits it off the green.
Yeah, by 40 yards.
Yeah, just don't go on the green. You're fine. But I think that, like, I'll bank on that upside. So there are enough guys below $9,000 where I can make a Thomas Koepka lineup work really well, and I think that'll be my favorite build this week. And I agree with you that my core will be Thomas plus golfer A in tier 2, basically. And I'm very okay with that. And then I'll just filter through and see who makes a cut in this lower salary tier. Before we close up, Brandon, though, we do have to discuss our winners for this week. Feeling pretty good coming off of last week. So we're going to exclude Justin Thomas. Everybody else is on the board. You can have one person on the high end and then one golfer who is 60-1 or longer to win. I know it's kind of tough in this field, but I think we both choose Kokrak if I made it 50. So let's make it 60 or longer. Who you got on the top end and the bottom end?
I'm assuming you want Brooks.
You can take him because I'm letting you pick first. And Brandon, I don't need the concessions to win. As
I got just something. Something in me is like, I know you want Brooks, so I don't want to take Brooks. But you can like take Brooks,
it's fine.
But I'm fine with Garcia. But I don't know who else you would take if I take Brooks. I'm trying to like game theory this one out, but I'll take Brooks.
Okay. Give me Gary Woodland.
Okay. He's missing the cut.
I'm considered Adam Scott, but I think Scott's a former winner here. That seems not as fun to pick a former winner. So I'm going to go Woodland.
It's not as fun. Yeah. Well, I mean, you took DJ last week. That was a lot of fun.
He's
for me.
Never won an event in his life, Brandon.
The no laying up guys were talking about how he's probably like the most underachieving golfer ever, which is
insane.
Yeah. How about these guys are just like kind of gross for like outright winning, but yeah. How about give me some Graham McDowell?
I think okay.
Who either missed the cut or finished like 20th.
So we're going to go head to head then. I'm going the same salary and going Trey Mullinax at $9,100. I'm going to go make that assumption that the approach game is actually improved, go with the distance off the tee, and we'll have a little fun. So you got McDowell, I got Mullinax on the top end. You got Brooks, and I got Gary.
Yeah, we should clarify that I'm not recommending that you bet Graham McDowell to win.
I'm recommending you bet Trey Mullinax even if he's 20-1.
Yeah, if I were looking for like deep value, I would.
Oh, it'd be Neiman at 150.
Yeah, or like CT Pawn. I just
do you have to make putts to win a tournament? Is that something?
Sometimes.
I think DJ would also be interesting at 100.
Yeah, DJ led in putting last week too, which is like not fair.
No, that shouldn't be allowed. Like he should have to like take an additional stroke per round. Maybe I don't know how that would work, but. We'll work on it. Neiman should get -1 per round. We'll talk with people about that and see if we can get that worked out. But yeah.
Give him a freebie.
Yeah, why not? Gimme if it's within 30 feet of the hole. I think that's fair. Yeah. Make things a little bit more even for him. But I like this event, Brandon, because it's different than what we've had the past couple of weeks. I think that we even had an event where I can just lock in Justin Thomas and feel good about it. But I think that you have some decisions to make around what you want to do after that. And it's maybe not the most fun type of tournament, but it's Justin Thomas on the top end. And I think that makes it more exciting for me personally.
Yeah. There are like, you can disregard pretty much what we ended up settling on and go with that balanced build and like load up on your lists and your Michael Thompsons and your Adam Scotts, and you can do that. I just have to think that JT's worth it even at his exorbitant ownership this week.
I would very much agree. And I think that just sometimes you got to bite the bullet. And I think that for me personally, that's what I'll be doing this week. You can do what you want. You can totally fade him. That's, you know, golf is a volatile sport and a lot of weird things can happen. So do whatever makes you happiest. Before we close up shop, quick reminder, NASCAR podcast now back in the rotation every Wednesday here on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed. You can get those and this PGA podcast every week by subscribing to that Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, the TuneIn app, probably other places I'm not even aware of, but you can find it there on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. Do want to thank you all for tuning in for this week. Good luck as you're filling out lineups for the Honda Classic. Back at you again next week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast powered by Number Fire.